Hello, I'm Tina Legere, and I'm the CCBHC Project Director. And I'd like to introduce my colleague, Chris Kluke.
Hi, I'm Chris Kluke. I'm the Director of Data Science at the Mental Health Center, which is a fancy way of saying I just help people get the information they need and make sure voices are listened to when they're responding.
I'd like to welcome you to Mind Your Mentality, Where Your Minds Matter. Together, we will be discussing certified community behavioral health centers and how they're refining the way communities access and experience care.
Thanks, Tina. Appreciate you having me on. I feel like if we're going to start this, we might want to talk about just what a CCBHC is as a starting point.
That's a good point, Chris. So when we talk about certified community behavioral health clinics, they're referred to as CCBHCs. So through the rest of our talk here, I'll just be saying CCBHCs because it is a mouthful. So what is a CCBHC? A CCBHC is a new provider type in the Medicaid program that provides a comprehensive range of services. And it is an enhanced Medicaid reimbursement covering the anticipated costs for expanding services. That's a mouthful. So what does that mean? At the end of the day, we're really looking at expanding access to patients in our community. And we need to have a good trained workforce to be able to do that. So through this enhanced Medicaid, they look at a different kind of reimbursement structure where they're actually looking at the total cost for care. At the end of the day, it means that we're able to pay our workforce at market. And by doing that, we're able to recruit and retrain a well-qualified workforce to be able to reach out to our community.
I think that's a really good description from a provider side. I think for me, the side that I really resonate with as someone who has kind of worked with communities in need and everything for a long period of my life, it's the idea that the motivation behind CCBHC really is about the patients. The model really came from some early studies that have found pretty consistently that people with severe mental illness die on average about 15 to 20 years before people without it. And when you look at the reason for that, sometimes it's directly related, such as suicide, but other times, and more often actually, it's chronic health conditions. CCBHC is a model which really designed to kind of address that gap. It's a moment where we can try and help people a little bit better by paying attention to those pieces that are often slipped through the cracks.
And what you're talking about, Chris, is really what integrated care is. Integrated care is looking at pulling all of those services and disciplines together to talk about a patient and what their whole patient needs are. So looking at the whole person, being patient-centered, is really important in the CCBHC model of care. So we're very fortunate at the center. We've had a primary care program. We actually have a partnership with the local FQHC in the community, Amerskaic Health. They've been on site with us providing primary care. So we're able to look at barriers to care. We're able to help patients who may be very nervous about seeing a primary care physician, who may not have seen a primary care physician in a long time. And then at the center, we have all the services here to treat them. We have a pharmacy on board. If there's some concerns or anxiety about why they're going to be coming, we have people who can help them with that. A big piece of the CCBHC model is what we call peer services. And these are actually people who have lived experience who, through the CCBHC model, the role of the peer has really been improved and highlighted to help with patient engagement and have better outcomes as our patients walk through their journey to improve their mental health, to improve their substance use disorders, and to improve their overall health care. Do you want to talk at all, Chris, a little bit as we think about the primary care when we're talking about these health metrics, what some of the things are that you see that we're tracking that are showing some great outcomes?
Sure. And one of the best examples I can give is the idea of open access. We are now a center where you can walk in 4 or 5 days of the week, depending on the time of day, and you will be seen same day for an intake. And that's something new that we implemented as part of CCBHC and other centers have as well. There is an estimation that CCBHCs around the country, 80% of them see a patient who wants to be seen within 10 days. When we talk about looking at being data informed as part of CCBHC and quality improvement, because that is one of the requirements, it's really looking at kind of patient outcomes and patient healing. And so care coordination, how often are we doing coordination? We've seen really big increases in the past few years in peer services, exactly like you said. And it's one of those pieces where we can act as that bridge a little bit more and act as that support system in more ways than we were ever able to do so before.
That's great. And you talked about the same-day access, open access. I would say here at the center, that was probably one of the most tangible transformational programs that we implemented as a result of being a CCBHC. There's over 300 criteria that if a center wants to become certified that we have to meet. And one of those, as you alluded to, is if a patient calls the center, we have a criteria that we're supposed to be able to see the patient within 10 business days. And most mental health centers across the country, the wait time and access to care is the biggest challenge that people have. And through the CCBHC model, because its biggest focus is to improve access to care, we had to do a lot of quality improvement work and workflows and staffing to set ourselves up to be able to have the same day open access, which, like I said, you alluded to. And that's, I think, probably one of the bigger programs that we are proud of. And if you talk to any of the staff involved with that, they would tell you. Now people don't have to call and wait. They can literally just walk in Monday through Friday. The hours right now are 8 to 3, and people can be seen. So it's we're very, very proud of that outcome as a result of being a CCBHC.
And I think another part of that, too, is the word community is right there in the name. Because when you look at the way we've been able to get some of these improvements, it really is by both going out in the community and connecting more to other resources. We already talked about with AMISKEG, they provide the medical side and we're able to help coordinate with them better. As a result of that, we've seen 1 in 3 patients who previously they had issues with blood pressure or BMI and they hadn't seen a clinically significant improvement, they saw an improvement for the first time last year. And that applies in a lot of different contexts. One thing that I think is really important to know is there's an outpatient side to this and a regular patient side, as well as a crisis side. We had a system in place to help with patients in crisis, but we've continued to work on that and refine it even as part of CCBHC. And so with us, if you call 988 and you live in Manchester area and someone needs to come out, it's most likely going to be us who are coming to help a patient in crisis, because we've got trained people to do that and we want to be there for that. And CCBHC is a big part of that.
That's a really important point. And I think it really positioned our center to be in a better position to be able to become a CCBHC. There's very specific required services that you have to be able to meet in order to apply to become certified. And we met those. You talk about crisis. We've had very good crisis 24/7 program that's been in place long before we became a CCBHC. We have wonderful relationships with the police department. We do training with the police department for critical incident training. Those were things that positioned us when we thought about, should we look at becoming a CCBHC? I think, as I said earlier, the ProHealth program for the integrated primary care was already here. You'll find there's over 500 centers across the country that have grants, have CCBHC grants. CCBHC has been around since 2017. Some states across the country became what they call a demonstration state first. Other states had centers like ours who dabbled with it by taking a grant. We started in 2021 with our first grant. We were the first center out of the 10 mental health centers in the state to put our toe into becoming a CCBHC. We're very proud of that. Through that work, we advocated with the state, and the state applied to become a demonstration state, which helped us now be where we are today and be able to have a better reimbursement structure, be able to pay our workforce at market, and be able to improve access to care. You hear me keep saying that because that really is what the beauty of becoming a CCBHC is. When we look at some of the other services, you know, we talk about easy access to care. Veterans and military is a very big piece of what CCBHC, they actually in the criteria call out specific requirements that CCBHCs have to be able to do outreach to veterans, apply services to veterans, really have a whole veterans program. We had that. We were well positioned to that. But because we're a CCBHC, we're doing a whole gap analysis to say, where are we? What are we doing good? What else can we do to improve? We work very closely with the VA. You talked about care coordination and partnerships. Partnerships is a really big piece of CCBHCs. As a community mental health center, we can't do this alone. We take a lot of pride in the community partnerships that we have, whether it's the Boys and Girls Club, whether it's the veterans, whether it's with Amescape Health. I can go on with just all the community partners that we work closely with. We actually have a partnership with the health department, with their community health workers. Just other examples, as you become certified, those partnerships become closer, and we're always looking to see where other partnerships can evolve. Another important piece of being a CCBHC is what they say, the voice of the patient. The voice of the patient is so critical when you are a certified CCBHC. As an example, our board of directors has to have 51% of our board membership has to be people with lived experience. We do a survey every year for all of our board members to make sure we're meeting that requirement. And we're always well over 70, 75% of our board of directors are folks with lived experience, have family members, or know somebody. That voice of the family, the voice of the patient, is so important when we look at our programs, policies, and procedures and services that we're providing.
Bringing that up is a really good point. And I think that we see that play out in a lot of different ways. The board is one example of it, but it's not the only one. You and I have both sat in as part of focus groups with individual patients. I actually think one of the stories we heard in that is a really good example. There was a patient who came to us as part of an emergency admission because they were concerned about his welfare somewhere else in the city. And so he came down here. First, it was under a required treatment for a while. And then after that, he made the decision he wanted to continue with us. And so we were talking to him 2 years later, and he said, thank you for everything you've done. He came to the focus group and because he wanted to tell that story and to say, one of our integrated care specialists, she's the reason I was able to be here today. I was homeless when I started this journey with the mental health center. And we see that story again and again in various forms, whether it's a survey or whether it's even some staff talking about the experience, what it feels like to make a difference when they're on a crisis call.
You know, you're making me think, Chris, of just we've done many focus advisory groups, again, to get that voice of the patient and bring it back. And we did one with our children's services, and we clearly heard some of the challenges that the parents had of just trying to navigate some of the issues they were struggling with in their own families. And as a result of that, we were able to get a peer position, a peer family support position just for the children's department. So really listening to what our patients are telling us and seeing what we can do to improve that and improve our services is a big goal for what CCBHC is. Another patient story that I remember, we did a focus group with our integrated primary care program with Amescape Health, and it was really so interesting to listen to these patients who were telling us how they had a history of being afraid to go to their primary care for the stigma, and they put off their health and taking care of themselves because afraid they weren't going to be listened to. And to hear these positive experiences because of the care that we provided, the care coordination that we did, they talked about being able to get into specialty appointments that prior to coming would have taken them a year to get in. Just that kind of impact that it had on their lives and the safety. But one of the bigger feedbacks that we hear is just feeling supported, not feeling like they had stigma because they were being here. They were listened to. They were followed up. That's the theme when we have these kinds of focus groups. We want to hear what we need to improve on. So we're not just asking questions, what are we doing good? We also want to hear what we can improve on. But we take that feedback and we bring it back to see what we can work on to make things better for our community.
Yeah. And I think that, again, that comes back to a community aspect that goes even beyond our individual patients. This model has impacts for other systems beyond just our center. Nationwide, CCBHCs generally see a 55% decrease in emergency room visits among those they treat. That is a key measure because an emergency visit isn't expensive, not just for the patient, but just in terms of our community resources and in terms of the ability of doctors to address other issues. So anytime we can help treat someone and give them the resources they need to get the support they need without going to the ER, that could be someone else's life who is saved as the doctors are working, or as well as community support that can be provided to other aspects of treatment.
You're making me think when we talk about patients coming to us and just their journey, having the peer, the role of the peer has been so supportive. If we find a patient that's scheduled to come and they don't show up, There's a lot of work that we do behind the scenes to reach out. Outreach is a big piece of what CCBHC is. Getting a peer involved to, again, take away that stigma, help them kind of normalize what's going on. It gives a spirit of hope when they see somebody who's lived it and is, you know, on the other side of it. So we have found that having peers be involved early on in a patient's journey is helpful for that. Just that overall engagement for what's ahead of them and their outcomes seem to be much better with that.
And that's kind of natural to think about it, that would have that effect as well. When you realize someone's been through something the same way you have, you know that they're speaking from experience of having lived this. And that's why our center tried to embrace peer services, is because we understand that value and we believe that people should be included in their own treatment to a degree and helping make people better. Even just if you think about the idea of a treatment plan, it's usually something you and your clinician make together as a patient. Patient interaction and patient involvement is key.
The other thing with being a CCBHC is what we call social determinants of health. And it's very important to try to identify when people are coming in what their challenges and barriers are. What's going to be a barrier for them coming in for their treatment? You know, people have issues with whether it's food insecurity, whether it's transportation, housing, homeless. Being able to identify that up front when we do our intake with people who show up, and then really working to help diminish as much as we can what those barriers are. There's a big, big focus on trying to reduce the social determinants of health that are going to help engage that person as they continue through with their treatment.
Yeah, but it's interesting you bring that up. This has been one of those things you and I are slightly different on. I actually tend to call them an alternative term, which is social drivers. And the real reason for that is I feel like patients can change these things to a degree. They can change their outcomes. They have that power to get better and to heal. And like, we all have that power to grow. So these social drivers of health, they are an impact and they do affect our health, but we can make a change. And that's part of what the center is here to do, is to try and help make that change.
The difference with being a CCBHC is there's a priority intentional focus on identifying what those barriers are. Even from if somebody calls the center instead of just showing up for an appointment and they don't show up, we have processes in place to do some outreach to that caller to see what stopped them from coming. It's really trying to identify what those barriers are and not just say, okay, that case is closed. It's trying to make sure we can do whatever we can to give that person the opportunity to come back and get the treatment that they need.
Yeah, it's giving that person that opportunity. If there's something we can do to help, we want to do it. If they change their mind and they say, I'm just not ready right now, that's fine too. It's about meeting a patient where they're at.
Another service that we've been doing under CCBHC is occupational therapy. And we're seeing some really nice outcomes from people who may have been homebound, may have had a chronic disease, and working with their teams to be able to help maximize as much independence as we can. So it's that real interdisciplinary team that's working together, people identifying what could be a potential barrier. Somebody may have a chronic disease and may be depressed. If we can get occupational therapy as a service that can get into their home and help work with whether it's cooking, helping other things in their house, getting them out and socializing, we've had some really nice feedback from our patients about how absolutely grateful they are that that's a service as part of our CCBH team that is provided to them.
Yeah, and I think what you're also talking about, these kind of wraparound services, is a term that's sometimes used. But I think part of that too is this idea, it again goes back to that idea of community. But in this case, it's the idea of creating community. I think our InShape program is a great example of that. It's a fitness program that's designed for health and wellness, but it's really about patients who are able to train, work together, and to celebrate each other's successes as they grow and work together. And that's one example of integrated care that is also part of CCBHC. It's the idea of just physical health and wellness and improving the way you feel and live your life.
We just did a focus group with our InShape program, and if you could just sit there and listen to what the patients are telling us, how important it is to read labels. Two people in that group lost over 100 pounds. Just the success of what they had, making reference to their mentors from InShape, working with their clinicians as part of the team, how good and confident they felt about themselves, the difference in their lives. They're the biggest advocates for what the InShape program is because they themselves are living through what the positive pieces are. The success we're having with that is another piece under just the holistic, whole person care, being able to help people be able to function at the maximum that they can and be able to feel good about themselves and be able to, whether we help them with finding a house, finding a job, help be with them, to help them deal with their job functions. It's the whole piece that we provide as a CCBHC.
Tina, you've kind of been part of CCBHC at the center since the very beginning. Where do you see this kind of model going for our center in the future? What kind of pieces do you want to see going forward as we continue at CCBHC?
That's a good question, Chris. You know, it's continuing to improve with our peer services. I describe it when I talk to people that we're in a continuous quality improvement phase. We're always looking at our data, which we target to say what's working, what's not working, where do we need to improve? You know, we put a lot of work into the open access. We're always looking at, is our volume increasing? Are more people coming in? If they're not, who else do we need to reach out to? So doing a lot of outreach to our partners, trying to find out what those barriers are. And when you think about CCBHC, so it's mental health, substance use disorder, and primary care. So the more we can help improve that integration, the better off, the better outcomes we're going to see for the population that we serve. So my hope, and we're definitely on our journey with that, and we're seeing that, is to continue and to improve that integrated care that we're doing that's going to help people really have positive outcomes in their lives.
I agree with that. And I think there's a lot of different ways we're kind of seeing that happen. For example, just within the last 6 months, we've really started opening up a new perinatal care program. This is a program where we work with doctors who help with pregnancy. And if someone is experiencing postpartum depression or they're just not feeling right mentally, and this can be the mom or the dad, because we all know that a baby being born means lack of sleep just as a beginning portion, let alone the million other things that are associated with that change. If someone needs that support in that time, we can then be there for that for them. And we're working with doctors in the area so that they can help make that referral and make that transition easy if they feel someone is at risk or needs help.
I think another piece, and I touched a little bit on it, is just the work with the veterans. We have a veteran liaison position here at the center who works with the local veteran services and is on different coalitions throughout the state. We have mandatory training for employees on military culture to understand what that means, to have us be a military veteran-friendly organization so veterans don't have a stigma coming here. And her role is to help train the clinicians to better understand what veterans and military families are going through. CCBHC has a very intentional focus on veterans. I feel very proud that we were on our path already prior to CCBHC, but this helps us really be more intentional to be able to identify just little things that we've done that you've been involved with, of just looking at our electronic medical record and changing color codes for if somebody is a veteran and, you know, there's a different color code that comes up on the chart so somebody knows that. Just little reminders that help us be veteran sensitive. Like I said, we already were, but it's just that intentional focus helps us to look at some of that data and look at ways that we can improve that.
Yeah, and those care pathways, which is what we call them, have a lot of different applications that are related to CCBHC. Like one other initiative that is very closely tied to CCBHC as a whole is Zero Suicide. It is a national initiative that CCBHC aligns with in a lot of ways, and we have both initiatives very active at the center. And so one of the things we've been able to help initiate as part of both CCBHC and Zero Suicide is a pathway notification where it lights up in the medical record that this is someone you need to pay attention to. And we have protocols related to that. If someone's at risk, they're then called after a missed appointment, and there's check-ins that are regular. But it's an impact that dovetails well with the CCBHC goals, this idea of meeting patients where they're at, giving them the support they need based on their needs.
The other criteria that is important is providing evidence-based practices. Chris, why don't you talk about the evidence-based practices?
I mean, it's one of those things where when we think about evidence-based practices, these have evidence behind them from scientific studies and in centers, and there is a body of evidence that shows if you do this and you do it the right way, the way we're describing, it will improve the lives of patients.
So there's research behind it. When we say evidence-based, it's research. So that's the piece when we talk about CCBHC. Our center has 22 different evidence-based practices that are research-backed that support the positive outcomes of what we're seeing to treat our patients. And as a CCBHC, you are required to be providing evidence-based practices.
Yep. And when we think about evidence-based practices, it's one of those things where one of my jobs at the center is really kind of helping to make sure those are working. It's looking at patient outcomes. It's looking at various measures to make sure, are these things helping? And they are.
And it's interesting because we have outside reviewers that come in that kind of audit the work that we're doing to validate that we're doing the evidence-based practices and the outcomes are supporting the good work that we're doing. The other piece I forgot to mention is that when we talk about CCBHC, so the populations we serve, it's with its children, it's adolescents, young adults, adults, seniors. So there's not an age discrimination to this. It's open to all ages to come in to be served.
Our center really is about kind of all different walks of life, and we have all different programs to support that. We have a senior program that works specifically with seniors. I have seen all of the various children's activities we do. That includes working with patients here at the center in therapy to actually helping support summer camps in the area and then giving the being counselors. And so there's all sorts of different aspects, and we're always trying to find new ones, like this podcast.
And the schools see us as an expert. So when we think about just that whole population, it was when I did that focus group, you know, just hearing that feedback from the parents, it was very positive to hear just the good work that is happening and what our therapists are doing for the different age groups for the children.
Yeah, and I know I'm the data guy, so when the data guy starts saying numbers, everyone gets a little afraid. I think one of the easiest ones is over the past year of the grant, served over 7,500 individuals for services under CCBHC. This includes almost 2,000 children, almost 4,000 individuals in high-need neighborhoods, and almost 2,000 people who are connected with our military, whether that's the 309 veterans themselves, or members of their family. There's lots of other numbers I could give, but I think that those are just a really good example of the kind of connections we're trying to build.
One of the other components, Chris, when we talk about getting the voice of the patient, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier, we do a patient satisfaction survey annually, and we are intentional with some of the questions that we're targeting to try to get some input from the patients and the families that we're serving. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to kind of the feedback idea we were talking about before. And when we get survey information from patients, we last year got 400 different surveys, and I read every one of them and the responses. I then made sure those responses, if there were responses that were something like we could change to help make things better, it then goes to the right people.
And that feedback also goes to the board of directors. So they can have a discussion around what's working, what's not working. One of the topics that we always like to hear is on stigma, you know, and that's a question that we ask whether we're doing the focus group and whether we're doing the patient satisfactions, which we want to get a sense from how patients are feeling around the stigma of mental health and services.
And that's a really important topic and a really serious one that probably deserves its own episode, to be honest. But to touch on it briefly, we know that for our patients, experiences of stigma have increased lately. We are trying to get a better understanding of where that's coming from, those experiences in their communities, whether that is one-on-one conversations or are there trainings we can do, because no one should feel stigma or feel like there's something wrong with them. And this is something where we want people to feel like they can talk about it if they're comfortable, that they are supported.
So some of the things that we've seen since we've become a CCBHC, we're definitely seeing that we're doing better care coordination. Our patients are telling us that. We've seen, and you mentioned this, the increase in our peer services. We've hired many new peers as a result of doing this work. We've seen overall improved care. Our patients are telling us that they felt better and their care had improved from the previous year. We are seeing patients are telling us, I talked earlier about the social determinants of health, and our patients are telling us that we're working hard at removing those drivers. We're getting good feedback on that.
And I agree. We've gotten a lot of good feedback from our patients on this information. I think there's actually one other group that might be worth talking about that we haven't really touched on yet. And that's our staff. Because when we talk about something like this, it can sound like a lot of work. It's like, oh, you're saying now I got to help with physical health and coordination and all this other stuff. I can say definitively that we know from talking to our staff and even staff surveys that one of the biggest drivers for our staff to say is seeing the impact of what they do. We are here as staff members because we believe in this mission and we believe in working with patients and seeing them improve. And so seeing these outcomes has helped, I think, our staff understand what that looks like. And it honestly, it feels better, I think, in some cases. Like from the surveys data we've gotten, we've been able to make a difference. And one of the easiest ways you can tell that is because we've got less staff leaving than we ever have before. We have seen improvement in staff retention. We've been able to pay people what they're worth now under this model because it pays for the actual cost of providing care. This really is a model that is a win for everyone.
Chris, I'm really glad you brought up about staff because workforce is a big component when we talk about CCBHC. Because we're able to have a different reimbursement structure that we can pay people at market, we are so intentional with how we're doing our recruitment and retention strategies. Internally at the center, workforce is a priority for our senior leadership, for our board. It's part of when we talk about our strategic plan, workforce is always a priority in there. So working on doing surveys, getting feedback, doing stay interviews with our employees, really trying to have our patients tell us what we're doing well and what we can improve on. When we talk about getting feedback from our patients, it's also getting feedback from employees also. And then it's also sharing our outcome data with them, letting our staff see all this wonderful work and hard work that they're doing, but getting out there and sharing the data so they can actually see the outcomes. This CCBHC work has been transformational for us as an organizational. It's been a lot of internal workflow changes, form changes, moving to open access, talking about health and wellness, you know, vitals, primary care, really looking at the whole person. So we're not just dealing with a mental health piece, we're looking at the whole person now. That's a change in how traditional mental health has been provided. So when we have this great data and outcomes and showing improvements for our patients and the patients that our staff are serving, and being able to be very transparent and share that with them, it changes the way they're looking at the work that they're doing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tina. And one of the ways we do that is by making sure staff are involved at levels of implementation so that there's ownership of that. When we were looking at implementing our open access model so patients could be seen on the same day, we had a clinician who was actually doing intakes in the room. When we talk about collecting vitals to make sure we can help monitor someone's blood pressure or measures for diabetes, such as blood sugar, we had a nurse in a room who collects vitals talking about that process to make sure we can do it in a way that supports everyone, staff and patients included. And if there's one thing I could ever recommend to someone who's trying to set up this model, or if you're one of the people just starting the beginning of the grant, because it's a long journey, but it's worth it, and you've started something good.
I want to thank you all for tuning in to episode 3 of Mind Your Mentality. Chris, I'm so glad you were able to join me at this conversation. I always joke around saying you joined at the hip with me, so I appreciate that. Be sure to follow us for future content. Until then, take care of yourself.
Thanks, all.